in Ziploc that. Right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper. The absolute truth.
The wait is over. The real is back. Big Randy and Tron back with the newest installment of the Trap Draw podcast.
What up, Tron?
Big Randy, how you living?
I'm living well, man. God, you sound good.
No, just squeaky clean.
We stepped up our mic game on our sabbatical.
All the haters.
Come at us. Get at us now.
Yeah,
it's good to be back, man. It's good to be back.
Good to be back just in time for the end of golf season, which is kind of the where I think we're going to shine.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. This is a Saturday afternoon. We're both kind of just chilling, watching the Mayakoba.
Actually, Mayakoba coverage just ended. We're watching the Schwab Cup.
The old guys.
Monty got chased down by Guidos. Hate to see it.
Monty's good. Well, cool, man. Yeah, we got. I'm excited about our guest this week. It's kind of a foray into a somewhat less talked about area in the world of golf. We're headed into the mid-am ranks. Our guest this week is Todd Mitchell. We had a great conversation with him, which we'll play here in a few minutes. You had a chance, Tron. You went down to the mid-am this past summer. Tell me about that. Where was it?
I did, yeah. It was more or less just hopped in the car. I really didn't have a good reason to go other than I just wanted to see what it was all about.
It's usually the best reason.
Yeah, kind of just, banter with these guys back and forth a little bit on Twitter and the vibe seemed cool and, I was kind of down for a road trip. So drove down to Philly from Boston and, on the way down, I sat in the South Bronx for about 4 hours because there was an overturned tanker truck right before the George Washington Bridge. So they had like hazmat and all that. So I ended up getting out there at it was at Stonewall out west of Philly, out towards Reading and part of the country I really haven't spent a whole lot of time in, Eastern Pennsylvania. But the two courses, one of them was a Doak course. I'm trying to think what the other one was. Ostensibly they're both Doak courses, but he didn't do the routing on one of them. 36 hole complex out at Stonewall out in Elverson, PA. And so, yeah, I got there at maybe 11 noon one day on Saturday. And, that was the first day of stroke play. And I really just went straight to the bar at the North course, caught a Miller Lite and just walked out to the putting green, and then walked over the range and then walked back over the putting green. And within 20 minutes, Todd Mitchell was like, "Yo, Tron." And I guess he just saw my no laying up hat. And from there, I spent the next probably 5 hours just bullshitting with him. And then watched a little bit of golf the rest of the day. And then after that, we actually went out and got some dinner with him and a guy named Andrew Price, I think his name is. He played at Kansas with Woodland and his caddy and then a couple other guys. And it was, it's just crazy how laid back and cool the whole vibe was up there. I mean, everybody was just down to hang. That night, before I went to dinner that night, I went to the bar in the main clubhouse and met a guy that's political science professor at University of Kansas. He was playing in his first USGA event. He made the cut, he made it through to the round of 64. So it was cool. It was a bunch of normal dudes just that happened to be pretty good sticks.
All right. Well, yeah, let's get to the interview then. Without further ado, here is our conversation with Todd Mitchell.
Todd, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. So I guess going back to the beginning, you're from Illinois.
Yes.
Did you play golf in high school?
I played golf in high school. Okay. I did not play it in college. I played baseball and played professionally in the Yankees organization for a couple of years. And then when that was done, I kind of picked up golf and again, and just to stay competitive in something and something to do, and started kind of playing in some local events. And that kind of fed into, you know, some bigger state events. And then I started to try to qualify for some USJ tournaments, like the mainly the amateur. And in 07, was the first time that I played in the US Mid-Am. And quite frankly, the only reason why I wanted to play in it was because it was at Bandon Dunes. You know, I still wanted to play kind of against, you know, the college kids. And I thought that, you know, the Mid-Ams were, you know, at that time were, you know, just the old guys. And I didn't really know what to expect. And, you know, the allure, I guess, of playing at Bandon Dunes, and I'd heard so much about it, and I was very excited to go out there. And then once I got out there, playing in the Mid-Am was just, I mean, it was kind of an eye-opening experience. It wasn't anything like playing in the US Amateurs when it's just a grind and, you know, there's a bunch of college kids and you stand out there on the range for hours. And you know, the Mid-Am in 07 kind of showed me, and I didn't really know that many people at all, you know, that, hey, these are guys just like me, just trying to come out here and, you know, compete and have fun. And, you know, when it's all over with, you know, maybe hit a few balls and work on some things and, you know, talk on the range. But, you know, then you go out and you have dinner and a couple drinks and you get up and you do it all over again. And that's really what it's all about. There's a ton of camaraderie and, you know, a lot of really good friendships out there for the Mid-Am golf.
So I think we're skipping over some things, Todd. I think you're being a little bit modest. I mean, you must have been a very good golfer in high school, right? I mean, are we talking? Tell me about your high school experience, because I'm having a hard time believing. You know, I've kind of seen some of these guys play, and it doesn't just happen. So there has to be a high level of skill, kind of as a base.
I played when I entered high school. I think I was about 5'4" and about probably 82 pounds.
Okay.
And you know, I played on and off varsity. Ended up playing in four state high school tournaments when I was in high school. Our team was really good. We finished second every year. My friends give me a hard time and say that I was the cancer of that team because they won the state championship the year before I got there and they won it the year after I left. that is hung over my head. So I had grown up playing. I started playing at a really young age. My dad got me involved and, you know, hitting balls, floater balls into this pond in a little town called Fairbury, Illinois. And, you know, I think I was 2 years old when I started swinging a golf club and, you know, played in some junior events, but nothing, you know, back then there really wasn't the AJGA. You know, you just kind of went out and there was a few tournaments, but nothing like it is now. Really, high school golf was, you know, it in terms of getting a scholarship to college. And, you know, I didn't play very much in the summers just because of baseball schedule. But, you know, I was competitive in high school. You know, I was pretty good. You know, I wasn't near what some of the kids are now that are coming out of high school. I mean, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But you know, like I said, I had a couple of scholarship offers to play at Illinois State, where I went on to play baseball at, and then University of Illinois. But that was, you know, that was before Mike Small and what he's done now.
So with the Yankees, where were you stationed in the minor leagues?
My first year, we were in Staten Island. It was also the team's first year, so we played at the College of Staten Island. You know, now, if you take a trip to southern Manhattan and maybe even on the ferry out to the Statue of Liberty, you'll look across at Staten Island and see this gorgeous, huge baseball field. And that was done about 2 or 3 years after I left. We played at the College of Staten Island, and there was a makeshift stand set up. But we drew very well just because we were the Yankees organization. And
any interaction with the boss during all that?
No. I never met Mr. Steinbrenner, and that is how he is referred to by every single member in the Yankees organization. Is Mr. Steinbrenner at all times? It's very Seinfeld-ish.
Yeah,
he demanded, and I think he got a lot of respect. There's a story when I was in spring training. There's a story one of the guys that was our athletic trainer was telling me. He said he was working out in the minor league facility, and all of a sudden his car alarm goes off, and he's on the treadmill. And he yells at the trainer, "That's my alarm. Can you get my keys?" And so he goes out there and he takes care of it. And he comes back in and he says, "You know, what was going on?" And he said, "Well, that was a UPS driver. He was dropping off a bunch of stuff and he must have slammed the door too hard." The story goes, now I never found out if it was true or not, but the story goes, for the rest of that year, there were no more UPS shipments allowed at that location. They only, back then they had DHL and FedEx. So he told me that as of that time that they no longer allowed UPS shipments to be delivered down to Tampa.
Okay.
So so like during this time, are you playing any golf?
Or
are
no.
You
just, okay. No, not really. I think I played I played zero rounds in New York, and I think I played one or two when I was in Greensboro.
Okay.
So golf wasn't even really on the map until I got back. I left, let's see, I got drafted in 99, played in 99, played about 90% of the season my next year, and left to go back to school and finish up my degree. Mm-hmm. And when I got back in August, there was a local tournament that I just kind of started to play in, and then in 2000 I did the same thing, just played real local, and then I started playing in the state am in 2001.
Was it just kind of steadily better once you started playing in the state am? Like,
yeah, I played in the state am my first year, and I finished I think eighth maybe. So because of that, I think the top 20 didn't have to qualify, so I was exempt for the next year and ended up winning the state am in 2002 and 2003, and then just kept playing. And 2003 was the first time that I tried to qualify for the USAM, and qualified and played at Oakmont. So it was a pretty quick learning curve.
Things escalated quickly.
Things escalated very quickly. Yes, and once I saw what the USAM was like, I mean, it was like, okay, I have to do this more often.
So when you started, having a little bit success first year in the state AM and then winning the state AM, are you in school at this point as a student? Are you?
I just started working.
Okay.
I started working in 2001. December 2001 was my first month in the workforce.
Okay. And were you stationed in Illinois? Are you living in Illinois this whole time?
Yep. Still there. Okay. Still work at the same place.
So not much, you know, limited practice time probably in the winter, I imagine.
Yes. Yeah. We shut her down in the wintertime. I mean, it's so cold here. You can't do anything.
Are you keeping your game fresh on like a simulator or something? And you just going cold turkey for a couple months?
now I will hit balls in a simulator and do some things like that. But back then, nothing, you know, just shut her down.
All right. So 2003, are you playing in a bunch of other amateur events too? Or are you just,
no,
just kind of focused on the state and
the state and really stuff. State and USGA. And I think it was either 2003 or 2004. Was the first tournament I played in that was, you know, kind of on the summer circuit, and that was Susquehanna Amateur.
Okay. And then so then the next year, like 2004, did you play at Winged Foot in the AM that year?
I didn't. I played in 2003 and then 2005 at Marion, then 2006 at Hazeltine were my first three.
Okay.
Are you like just menacing weekend cash games like back at a home club? I'm fascinated.
No. Well, no, I, at the time I played a lot more of those cash games and, you know, had a group that I played with, and like every Saturday and Sunday, you know, didn't have kids or anything like that. And, you know,
yeah,
back then it was, you know, go out on Friday, get up early in the morning, go play golf, take a nap in the afternoon, go out again on Saturday night. And then get up early on Sunday, play golf again, and then take a nap Sunday, and then go to work. But it, yeah, I mean, it was we always had some good games on Saturday and Sunday. I wouldn't say that I was menacing everything, no. But definitely a lot of fun, though.
And then, like, just like a typical week back then, you know, hitting balls every night, once a week. What's the practice schedule look like?
I'm probably not near, you know, what you may think. I don't remember doing really a whole lot other than, you know, play maybe once during the week and on the weekends and then in tournaments.
Okay. All right.
All right. So then, 2005 at Marion, how'd you do in the USAM there?
Made match play and lost to Reese Davis.
Okay.
In the first round.
Is this the color commentator for ESPN?
No.
I'm joking.
No, because if I would have seen him and I would have lost him, I'd have never watched SportsCenter again.
That experience versus 2003, did you feel like you made a ton of progress?
Yeah.
I did.
I wanted to play, you know, obviously I didn't qualify in 2004, but I watched it on TV and I really wanted to play. And, you know, when I got to Marion, you know, I was very comfortable there and played well and really well in qualifying. And then, you know, I got a Walker Cupper in the first round and neither of us really played any good. He just outputted me.
Okay. And then, all right. So then you played 2006 at Hazeltine then?
2006 at Hazeltine, yep. Lost to Webb Simpson in the first round.
Okay. And did he just knock your socks off or was it?
He you know, it was actually pretty even. He was one up going into 16 and he actually shanked it in the water on 16.
That's perfect. That's so good.
Yes. So I won 16 and then I proceeded to hit the biggest pull hook six iron you've ever seen into a lake that's not even in play on 17 and lose that hole. And lose two up on 18.
Oh.
So yeah, so I saw the shank. I took advantage of it and then I completely gave it back to him.
All right, so 2006 and then so 2007, did you play at Olympic Club?
I did not. I did not make it in 2007. I played in 2008 at Pinehurst, missed match play by one. Played in 2009 at Southern Hills, and Southern Hills is extremely difficult too. I wasn't really ever close to making match play because on the alternate course, I started out the tournament by making six consecutive bogeys. So I was out early.
Yeah. And then, all right. So as far as all these courses or all these venues, they have an alternate course.
Yes. Every single one. There's, you know, at the USAM, there's 312 players. Mm-hmm. So, you know, We got 156 people on each course each day. And at the mid-am, I think it's 256. So it's later in the year and they don't have as many players.
So then, all right. So then going back to, so 07, you said was abandoned the mid-am.
Yep.
So you just qualified for that kind of on a lark. Said, yep. I just want to go play abandoned. And then how'd you play there?
I shot 83 my first round.
Okay.
And then they had a huge, I was like one of the first groups off the next day. And I remember hitting balls and I hit about 10 or 12 balls in the morning. It's pitch black. They got those lights out there and it's, if you can imagine, no wind, but one of those overhead showers and it's just like raining down on you. Yeah. That's what it was. And I go out for the first few holes and it was dead calm. And then by the end of the round, it was blowing probably 35 and raining.
Wow.
And I shoot 68 and get into match play. And we were actually the night before, a good friend of mine who caddies for me all over the place. He does a great job. We were actually looking at flights to come back and he looks at me and after about 30 minutes of trying to figure this out, he looks at me and hits me and he's like, "You're making the cut. I don't care what it takes. You're making the cut." And it happened. And I made it to the second round. I lost to Jim Lehman, Tom Lehman's brother. Hmm. And, in the second round.
So are you just sitting there in the clubhouse for like 7 hours or 8 hours then just watching guys like just blow up and, you know, you're basically just scooting up the leaderboard.
Yes, basically. Yeah. And then it got to the point that it was so bad that they actually suspended play fairly, I want to say like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something. And being the guy on the outside looking in, I was pissed. I was upset.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, but, you know, they came back the next day and finished up. And I think I moved up like 207 spots or something that day.
Wow. That's incredible.
That was definitely the highlight in terms of qualifying.
And then,
so that was your first mid-am. How did you find the atmosphere, you know, then and now, I guess? How would you compare it to the atmosphere at a U.S. amateur? A little bit more casual, as intense? Kind of, if you would, talk about how are they similar, more similar, or are they very different?
They would be very different.
Okay.
You know, especially now. Back then, it wasn't when I first started playing at the USAM. You know, I was younger back then too, so I'd stay out there and beat balls and, you know, soak it all in. But now, I mean, these guys are, I mean, the college players are tour players. I mean, mm-hmm. They have a regimen they do. They go through everything. And the mid-am is not like that. I mean, you go out there and after you get done, I mean, you might meet a guy from Twitter and end up sitting there at the bar and drinking beer and having fun and going to hit a few balls. I mean, basically, you know, you get done after the round and you go to the bar and maybe get something to drink, get something to eat, and then go maybe hang out on the range for a while, you know, with, you may or may not have a beverage with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, you see people on the range that you know, you talk to them. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, I've made a lot of really good friends playing mid-am golf and it's good to catch up with them because you never see them. You only see them a few times a year.
Mm-hmm. So that, all right. So I'm looking on Wikipedia here. So you show up the next year at the mid-am at Milwaukee Country Club and
Wikipedia.
Yeah. It's on Wikipedia, man.
Big time.
So for what the mid-am?
Yeah, the mid-am. So, Milwaukee Country Club, had you ever played there before?
No.
Okay.
No, and actually I haven't played there since.
So did you have pretty good vibes going in?
Or? Yeah, I it was, that week was a lot of fun. I had met a friend from Wisconsin and his name is Bob Gregorski. He lives in Appleton. And one of his good friends, his name is Mike Daly. He's a member at Milwaukee. So in the practice round there, we meet this guy and he shows up and he's driving this cart around and he's basically the trash guy. You know, that was his job. That's what he volunteered for, only because he could get a cart. and he introduces himself, and, you know, by the end of the week, I got to know, I don't know how many members at Milwaukee, and they made me feel at home, and having beers in the clubhouse afterwards with Mike and the bartender knew our names. I mean, it was such a good week. It felt like a home game, really.
Yeah. So you get through stroke play.
Yeah, I was in a playoff.
Okay.
I had to get through a playoff to get into match play. It was a huge.
Yeah, was it one of those like 15 for 6 playoffs?
It was more along the lines of like 23 for 15 or something crazy.
So kind of squeaked in to match play, and then in match play, did you start plowing through guys or?
I beat Nathan Smith in the first round. That was my first introduction to Nathan Smith, and we've become really good friends since. And I immediately, obviously, I knew that he was really good, mm-hmm. and you know, he lived up to everything that I thought that match would be. I ended up hitting I think 6-iron on 18 to like 3 feet, and he missed it left, and I didn't even have to putt, and I got through that, and it was good from there on. I think I beat Chris Lang 9 and 8, one match.
You aimed him.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly. But he, you know, he didn't say anything bad about me or anything like that, about my inferior equipment or anything.
Yeah.
It was, some matches were really good, really close. Sean Knapp's, when our match was really good. I just remember beating Chris Lang pretty bad. And
so 64 guys make it through a match play. So there's five. How many rounds is that?
I think it's six total matches.
Okay. So you get through to the finals.
Yeah.
And how are you feeling going in the finals? You a little bit nervous or?
I thought I was going to win. I knew I was going to win. You know, I was looking ahead. It's an awful feeling, actually, you know, waiting. I couldn't sleep the night before. The only thing I could think about was being at Augusta, and I totally stunk it up the next day. Just was terrible, and I haven't been in that situation since. I hope to be in there, you know, in that situation again at some point. But you know, I learned a lot from it, and I never saw myself losing, and I think I just looked ahead, and maybe the moment was too big for me at the time. I don't know, but it was. I did things that match that I had not done all week, and
yeah,
you know, it was still a great experience. There was, I don't know how many people came up from Bloomington to follow. I know one of our friends was like 7 months pregnant at the time, and she walked all like however many holes it was, 33 or whatever, 32 holes. Mm-hmm. But it was, there was a lot of people that came up and supported it. It was a really, really great week.
So then mid AM wise, beyond that, how many times have you qualified for it since then?
I've missed two. I missed in 2012 when it was actually in Chicago.
Okay.
And last year in 2015.
Okay. I mean, really looking at it, it's like Nathan Smith, he rattled off three of the next four after Milwaukee there. So.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, so I think what we want to do is get into some of your favorite courses you've played, and some of the other mid-am, kind of the mid-am circuit.
Sure.
You know, I think is so really after that, when did you make the jump to start playing other mid-am events, you know, and what are those events?
You know, it takes a while. You know, you have to, I think, you know, either you have to play extremely well for a long time, or have become friends or become known with some of the guys that play in these events, and then your name gets thrown out there, and then you know, it might be the next year that you get invited, or, you know, it might be 10 years and you might never get invited. It's just, there's no really explanation for why you get in or not. But it, you know, kind of once you're in, then, you know, and you play well, then, and you, you know, you don't do anything stupid, you end up getting invited back. And you know, like some of the events that I played in was at the Crump Cup at Pine Valley. That's one of my favorites. The last week was the Crane Cup down at the Floridian. Anytime you get to go to Florida in November is always good. But I mean, the golf course and the way you get treated at these places are fantastic. I mean, you're spoiled, to be honest with you.
This might be a stupid question, and I apologize, but who puts on these tournaments?
Normally the club.
Okay.
They'll have a committee. Most of the time it's, you know, a member or the general manager of the club. Or, you know, sometimes a guy approaches the owner of a club or the membership of a club and has an idea, and it kind of gets taken from there. You know, the Crane, I think, is fairly new. I think it's been going on for maybe 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
And some of these, you know, some of these have a long, long, long history. Like the Crump goes back to like the 20s, I think.
Okay.
And then as far as the format, are they all individual or some of them team?
There are actually a lot of mid-am four-ball events out there. So you've got the Williams.
Is that the one at Oak Hill?
Yep, that's the one at Oak Hill. I've never played in that, but I heard it's a really, really good event. There's the four-ball, the international four-ball. There's the Carlton Woods Invitational. And then they've got, you know, there's one at Whisper Rock. There's one all over the place. So, I mean, there are some really, really nice places. And I haven't played in all of them. Just a few, actually.
This is what we joke about. Just prime Illuminati gatherings. Just, you know, the best of the best courses. Guys who, obviously, great players, but, you know, not live other lives as well. It's like, for me, it's as good as golf gets. It's like the mystique around the mid-am circuit is really one of my favorite things about the game.
Well, Todd, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like, it seems like you want to try, but you don't want to try too hard.
Well, I would say that every event that you play in the mid-am, you know, you know these guys, you compete against them all the time. I'd say, you know, you're trying to compete as hard as you can, but you're not going to go out and you know, everybody's attitude would be considered laid back off the course. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you compete against everybody and you definitely, you don't want to take the opportunity for granted at all. I mean, you're being invited to play, at these amazing places that treat you so well. And you want to make the best of it, you know, and these events only come around, you know, once a year. And, you know, I mean, it's in some ways it's bragging rights and some, you know, in other ways, you know, it's great camaraderie, good friendship. You know, you hang out at dinners, you have drinks, you tell jokes. You know, it's a lot of fun. A lot of these places are really low key compared to what you may think. Mm-hmm. But it's just a great, it's a great time. You know, it's off the course is extremely relaxing.
So how do you put together your schedule? What do you do for work and how, you know, do you have considerations there as far as certain times of the year where you can't play as much and you got to stack it into, you know, certain months of the year, or
definitely
how do you go about that?
Definitely. You know, there are just some events that, you know, you can't play. There's really, starting in the spring throughout the summer, there's really a tournament every week. And I don't get invited to every one of them. There's some guys that do, But you could play every week in the summer. And, you know, at some point in time, you have to say enough is enough. You know, you have responsibilities at home. You got to take care of the kids, whether you're coaching baseball or, you know, working, you know, or, you know, living your normal life. That takes precedent over everything else. I know people wouldn't always say that about some of the tournaments that I play in and the schedule that I do, but, you know, it definitely does take precedent over that. You know, it's, I think you get a really good idea maybe early in February what you're going to do, like kind of for the summer. A lot, some of the invitations come out over email, or get sent to you, and you kind of build your schedule that way.
Are some of them handicap based?
None.
So they're all okay. So they're all just straight up.
Nope. The only handicap one that I'd ever played in was actually with Brad Garrett. You may know him on Twitter, the BG show. BG.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Golf is cool.
Hashtag golf is cool.
Yes, I actually went out and played at Prairie Dunes with him.
Oh, nice.
In 2015 in an event that was actually handicapped. That was the first one that I'd seen like that. But it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. That was very relaxed.
How sweet is that course?
It's awesome.
Like that place just looks so, like, I remember they had the NCAAs they had out there a few years ago where they had it on TV, and I was just this place looks unreal.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not that long. It's really hard. If you don't drive it well, I mean, you're going back to tee and the greens are really undulated. It has a great mix of long holes, really hard holes, and then holes that look easy that when you play them are not. But the atmosphere there is great. Hutchinson is a town of about 3,000. There's absolutely nothing to do there. I think the biggest thing, the nicest restaurant they have is like Applebee's. But you know, you go to the golf course. And you go to the club, and it's like it's a whole nother world. You know, you just enter, you know, kind of this long road, and then all of a sudden it just opens up, and you're out there. You don't really see any lights or hear traffic. I mean, literally, you're in the middle of nowhere. And it's such a good course.
So playing in some of these remote locations, like, are you having to really like keep yourself on a limit as far as how much you drink? Because I can just see that, like, being like, you know, having too much fun at the bar the night before, being super hungover the next day. I mean, is that definitely a balancing act?
Yeah, you want to have fun, but not too much fun. You know, I've made the mistake a few times of having too much to drink and you know, getting to the putting green the next day and everything, like gripping the putter and having fat hands, and your hands just don't fit on the putter right, they don't fit on the club. You know, it's not fun. So yeah, they're you learn very quickly about how to manage that.
All right. Well, Tron, I think, can we hit you with some kind of closing rapid fire questions, maybe on the golf topic or otherwise? Yep. And then,
absolutely.
All right.
All right. So I think my first one would be, what's your biggest goal in golf that you haven't accomplished?
I would really like to win the mid-am, you know, and there's, you know, and that's, I think that's something that everybody wants to do. You know, sitting in my shoes, you know, being 38 or close, I think that's the ultimate goal. You know, winning a USGA championship, and you know what, it doesn't even happen to be just the mid-am. You know, winning the four ball would be unbelievable with Scott. You know, I think that might even mean more than doing that than winning a US mid-am or something like that.
Do you use a baseball grip?
I do not. Although recently I've thought about it.
Okay.
Was that tough back in the day? Like were your baseball swings and golf swings kind of competing against each other?
Oh yeah, definitely. 100%. I still fight, I think, things that I did with my baseball swing, and I haven't played baseball in 20 years almost. But yes.
You play recreational softball?
No,
just go out and mash.
I did for a few years. No, absolutely not. I was the single worst slow pitch softball player you'd ever seen. I was terrible.
Favorite course you've ever played?
Favorite course I've ever played? I would say Oakmont 1A Pine Valley 1B, LACC 1C.
Go to post-round drink of choice.
Normally, I know this is terrible. Normally, it's just like a Miller Lite or Coors Light or something like that. You don't hit the hard stuff early on.
Okay, all right.
What's your favorite course to play in Illinois?
Favorite course to play in Illinois? I would say I love Olympia Fields. I get to play that probably once or twice every year. Another place that's really good. There's so many places in Chicago that you never really even heard of or haven't even – they probably don't want to be heard of. Skokie Country Club is fantastic. Knoll Wood, where the Western was at this year. Tron, I know you wanted to get into that.
Yeah.
Knoll Wood is fantastic.
Maybe a name or two in and around the mid-am golf world that would make for a great interview.
I think you'd want to definitely talk to Skip Berkmeyer. He actually has his own, he helps with a radio show down in St. Louis. He's a lot better on the microphone than I am. He's got a face and a voice for radio. he would be good. Scott Harvey would be another good guy. Nathan Smith, especially with his success that he's had, playing on however many Walker Cup teams and playing in four Masters. You know, these guys, Scott and Nathan, have both played in the Masters before. There's a bunch of guys, that would be great interviews that have, been out here for a long time. Some guys, not even that long, but have had success and are great to be around. I mean, the camaraderie kind of, but it's more along the lines of, cutting up in the bar afterwards and making fun of everybody and everybody making fun of you. That's really the best part of the mid-am thing. You get to play great places and great tournaments and you get treated great beyond really anything that I could ever even want or expect to be. But, spending time with the guys off the course is really what it's all about.
Are there any?
Oh shit. I know what I wanted to ask you, Todd.
Yeah.
How do you like the push cart?
Not a fan.
Are we going back to it? No?
No. I tried it. I gave it a chance.
That's disheartening to hear.
It's nice to not have to carry your clubs and to be able to lighten the load, so to speak. But you got to walk all the way around all the greens, either that or you got to carry all your clubs in your hand. And who wants to carry like six clubs in their hand?
It's a lot of logistics,
maybe it's because
sure.
that, Yeah. It is. You have to map the course in a way that you're totally unprepared to do. And maybe that has to do with my inexperience using a push cart, but I don't see myself going back to that at any time. Wow. No, I'm not a fan. I know you're a member of the push cart mafia.
That hurts. Yeah.
Ed Lohr's getting there with his push cart.
We're recruiting.
I used it once at it. I'm just six and I was out. I was like, it was too much thinking,
And I think the way it's going now is, they got all these different colors with all these different wheels. That's just something you don't want to bring attention to.
What course, like totally under the radar, have you played either in a tournament or just in general that you've really enjoyed playing that's kind of near and dear to your heart?
Well, some of the places, they don't want the love, they don't want to be recognized. They just want to do what they do. I think the most, one of the coolest places I've ever been and played was at Old Elm in Chicago. It's 6,400 yards, par 73, and it is not easy. It's really cool. I mean, I've only played it one time and I would love to go back. It's just the old school architecture with the newer green speeds that make it so difficult and so good. It it would be really under the radar. Good answer.
Hey.
ass and ziplock that. Right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper. The absolute truth, yeah, no joke. Who me?